Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right. It is a, depending on where you are in the area, it's a pretty nice morning out there. Here in San Antonio, a little foggy, very pleasant temperature out there. Just a light breeze. You get up very far north, that wind has shifted around to the north, and it's quite chilly. So if you're going to do anything outdoors, do it right now if you got to run out and feed the deer, or feed the birds, or whatever else, because it's going to get a little windy. Not going to be a bad day, but it's going to be, it's going to be not quite like it was yesterday, shall we say. I've got lots of things to talk about, but more importantly is the thing that you want to talk about. And I've got James and Clint waiting to talk. Leaves a couple of open lines. Grab one if you like. 210-599-5555. James is up first. Good morning, James.
Morning, Bob. How you doing?
Well, I'm off to a good start this morning. You got that iron stove cranked up, or has the front hit your area yet?
Not yet, man. We're waiting on it.
Well, from what I hear, you better have it ready to light.
Okay, I'm going to run the log splitter today and try to get it in supply.
That'd be a good thing to do.
I wanted to remind you guys that the official date for planting carrots is the 18th in this area, I think.
Oh, really?
What I heard, what I was told. And we got some seed coming from Johnny's. We plant it with a push planter. It's called a pelletized seed.
Right, right. That carrot seed's so fine, it's a whole lot easier to get it properly spread out if you use that pelletized seed, that's for sure.
Yeah, it looks like little white BBs. It's pretty neat stuff. And I just wanted to remind everybody that Johnny's has got that seed for those 60-day carrots, and we're going to get going on it here pretty soon, as soon as we get our 5,000 package from Johnny's.
So are you planting one of the half-long varieties, or do you plant big carrots?
Well, it's just a quick, short spring carrot. They're called Nantes and Amsterdams.
Yeah, Nantes has been around for, 60, 70 years. That's a great old variety. And, there's some other good ones, Danvers half long. And, you get out and get your carrots planted and, protect the young seedlings from that wind that's coming. And, we'll talk again soon.
Okay, Bob.
Thanks, James. I'll talk to you later. Goodbye. Clint is next in line. Then it'll be Chris and Joey. Good morning, Clint. Hey, Clint, you there? Jimmy, we got, did Clint lose his call there? Are you hearing me? Jimmy? One, two, three, four, five, five, four, three, two, one.
Hello?
Are you there, Jimmy? Hello?
Yeah, we got the caller online right now.
Okay, very good. I was talking to you, not hearing anything. Okay, so Clint's there and waiting.
I'm here. Clint. Go ahead, Clint.
Good morning, Clint. Good morning, Clint.
Good morning. I guess the gremlins are out this morning.
Oh, these little metal electronic boxes. They've got a mind of their own sometimes. What are you up to today?
Oh, just getting ready to start the day and stuff. I got a few things to bug you about.
Let's get started. I'm all ears.
Who is the name of the tree trimmer that you recommend?
The tree trimmer that I recommend for substantial arbor-type work is Etter, E-T-T-E-R, Etter Tree Care, Ed Etter. If you've just got a tree needs to be taken out, there's a guy named Jordy Hagen that's has a company called Tree Wise Men. And if you're looking for a consultant that doesn't actually do the work but is about the smartest man I know when it comes to arboricultural things, his name is David Vaughn. So, you know, those are my three three guys that I go to, but and they're all good. They're all good. Like I say, David's a guy that teaches courses other arborists have to take if they want to be certified, and the other two are, you know, both guys that actually do the work.
Okay, good deal. On asparagus, remember you said something when you pick them, you got to pick every one of them at the same time?
Well, you pick on a given day, you pick every one of them. Some people think, oh, I'll let some of them go to make ferns and I'll pick the others. Well, once you let them start making the ferns, they stop producing. So when you're picking, pick everything that comes up, and if anything gets too big, pick it and just discard it, because it's taking those asparagus fronds off, or those spears off, that stimulates the crown to produce more and more. So yeah, it's sort of an all or nothing thing. Pick everything for the appropriate length of time and then stop picking completely.
When do you stop picking?
Well, that depends on, you know, how mature your asparagus patch is. First year or two, you're probably going to pick for 2 or 3 weeks. You can't pick too much, or you draw down the crowns too much. After that patch has been in 3 years, maybe you can probably pick for a couple of months. After that patch is 10 years old, you can probably pick for 3 months before you need to stop picking. So it depends really on the maturity and the vigor of the plants. And the idea is you're picking everything that comes out until you're afraid that you'd be drawing the plants down, in which case it's time to let them grow up and, you know, recover some more energy.
Okay, I got you. Some of our, this is the first year in the ground now, and we started picking a little bit, and we got some nice thick ones and real skinny ones. But
yeah.
So I've been cutting the skinny ones too.
Well, absolutely, but don't be picking too long. You don't new plants that aren't real well established. You're only really going to pick the first year for a week or two. After that, it's best to let them just grow, and next year you'll be able to pick longer, and it'll just keep getting longer every year after that. That's why it's important to plant lots of them.
Especially as good as they are.
Yeah, it's a lot of them don't ever make it out of my garden. They get snapped off and go directly into my mouth. My friends think I don't do very well on asparagus because I don't have very much of that to share because I eat it all myself.
So, now, my wife rescued a poinsettia with a green stem but no leaves. Can that be put in the ground to grow, or what's a good thing to do with that?
Well, it's totally up to you. Down where you are, yeah, you can put it in the ground. You want to put it in a place where it doesn't get like a porch light or night light at night, because what makes the leaves, the bracts, color up is getting the natural day length. That's what stimulates them to produce the color, is having long nights and short days. And that, of course, you know, naturally happens as we get into December or so. But if you have it where it's getting, you know, bright light from any other source, it thinks it's still July and never turns color. There's a church not too far from the nursery here that plants them out front. And if we don't get an early freeze, I mean, they've got plants 4 and 5 feet tall, just bright red starting in early December. So you can grow them in the ground. If you prefer to grow them in a pot, you can do that. Now, they're not going to be the nice, compact little plants that, you know, they were the first time somebody bought them from the greenhouse or from the florist, because they, you know, they treat them with some growth retardants and things like that to keep them from getting so big. But they'll make a big bush, and like I say, the years that they don't freeze back too early, you'll have a beautiful poinsettia bush in the yard.
Now, is that better for filtered sun or full sun?
Oh, they'll take full sun just fine, even down in your part of the South Texas.
Okay, well, that's about all I got today. I appreciate your time.
Well, you get out and enjoy your day, and I appreciate the call. And as always, I'll look forward to our next visit, Clint. Thank you so much.
Take care.
You too. Bye. Next in line is Chris. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Okay.
I have a raised bed garden in my backyard.
Uh-huh. Right.
And it's been there for, 2 years now. And everything I put in there, it never grows full of potential. I put onions in there that I got from y'all a month and a half ago, and they still haven't grown any.
What do you fertilize with, and how often?
Once a month with the what y'all have, the fertilizer that y'all have there.
The Hester Grow plant. Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of it is, part of it is just the weather's been cool. But double up on your fertilizer. Start doing it every 2 weeks. And one thing that I always do in my garden is I put in, some of that slow-release dry fertilizer. I put a fair amount of that in before I ever plant the first time. And that's sort of, that's sort of like having a closet full of food you can always go to. And then when things are up and growing, I'll go ahead and add some of that liquid fertilizer. But I feel like it really helps. I try to put the fertilizer down about 2 weeks before I'm going to plant. And then after things are up and growing, I wish I got around to it that often, but I'd increase the frequency of your fertilizing to about every 2 weeks, and I think you'll see a big change in the growth you get. At this point, if you want to throw a little dry granular fertilizer out, you can certainly do so, but it takes that a little bit longer to be digested by the soil microbes where it's really available to the plant. So and next season, this being probably the fall season, when you get ready for the places you're going to plant your fall plants, go ahead and put some dry fertilizer down, a little bit of compost on top of it a couple of weeks in advance of planting, and I think you'll find you get a lot better initial growth.
Okay. Yeah, because, I planted okra, and it never got over 2 feet, and then it started producing okra.
Mm-hmm.
My carrots never grow. My beets and radishes never grow. They get to a certain point, and I thin them out, and then that's it. They don't even grow any further than that.
Well, you probably have a soil that was, a little high in bark and things like that. And the microbes that break down the woodier materials in the soils, they are going to get their fertilizer before the plants get any. And sadly, I hardly know where to tell people to go to term for good soil if you're going to get bulk soil. So it probably is just, your soil is eating a lot of the fertilizer before the plants get a shot at it. So fertilize a little more often and put some dry fertilizer down before you plant the next crop of things, which probably be July or so when we start thinking about fall tomatoes and all. And I think you'll see a big change in the growth that you get. And try a little foliar feeding, too. I prefer to put most of my fertilizer on the soil to support the root system. But if you want to jumpstart things, there's nothing at all wrong with taking that same Hester Grow and use it at the recommended rate, probably an ounce per gallon. But use that as a foliar feed as well as putting it on the ground, and I think you'll kind of jumpstart things that way as well.
All right, yeah, because at sun time, I get morning sun from about 9:30 till about 2 in the afternoon, and then after that, I don't get any really hot afternoon sun. So I thought, well, maybe the soil's too cold yet.
Well,
really good is tomatoes.
Yeah, by that time, the soil should be warm enough. Now, and by the time July and August get here, they like a little shade, but they still need good bright light. But, man, by the time June or July gets here, your tomatoes ought to be taller than you when you're growing Juliet and Sun Gold and things.
Tomatoes, I have no problem growing.
Uh-huh.
So tomatoes are awesome. It's just everything else doesn't grow. I just don't know onions don't grow. They're, like I said, anything that's in the ground. And my okra. That's the only thing that doesn't grow very well.
Okra is a real fertilizer-loving plant. Check your varieties, too, and be sure that you're getting, because there are some dwarf okras out there. But if you're planting Clemson Spineless and, oh, what's the other one? Green pod, long green pod are the two that I usually plant. And they, I mean, you don't want the Beck's Big Okra that gets 9 feet tall because you have to get a stepladder to pick it. But be sure that you're not getting a dwarf okra variety. And that's one you can feed every week and it'll give you real good results. Also, don't plant your okra too early. It likes hot soil. I don't usually plant okra.
Last year when we had I did the okra and it just got like 2 feet and that was it, and it put like 2-3 of them on there and then it just quit.
I need more, yeah, more frequent fertilizing, and be sure it is a tall growing variety. It ought to be producing at least into September for you. So pick up your fertilizing and let me know how it's doing.
All righty, I appreciate it, sir.
I appreciate you, Chris. Thank you, sir. Goodbye. Got to do a break here. Joey will be up first when we get back, and looks like I get to talk to you for a moment about the good folks over at Rhonda's Nature's Way. Can't go today. They're always closed on Sunday, but I love going to Rhonda's Nature's Way, and I just give her a lot of credit for, you know, how good I feel 99% of the time. I was just getting things out this morning, looking at the immune support that I take. That's just absolutely wonderful stuff, and it's the reason that I usually stay healthy when everybody around me is getting cold and flu and COVID and things like that. She also has great supplements, and let's face it, our diets just aren't what they were a few years ago. The quality of the food in the grocery store, unless you're successfully growing your own, just doesn't have the same nutrient content. And as we get older, we need a few additional things. Well, Rhonda can tell you what they are and get them to you in a really, really good form. She also practices reflexology, red light therapy, beamer light therapy. She has a foot bath detox program. I can go on and on about all the different things you're going to find at Rhonda's Nature's Way. And she and her staff are so knowledgeable. If you have questions, they'll take the time it takes. If you've been to the doctor, gotten your blood work back, and just not satisfied with how you feel, take a bite and consult with them. They'd be more than happy to help you. And like I say, I've known Rhonda for a long time, and I give her credit for an awful lot of my good health. Find out what I'm talking about by going to visit them every day except Sunday over there in the shopping center at the corner of I-10 and Callahan, kind of across the parking lot from Sprouts. And if you're fighting the allergies like so many people this year, ask her about Cedar X, ask her about seasonal allergy relief. Those are things that I really find help me a great deal. Rhonda's Nature's Way.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Joey and Julian are my next two callers, and Joey is up first. Good morning, Joey.
Good morning, Bob. How you doing?
Off to a good start, although when I came into the nursery this morning, I was just thinking how nice and pleasant it was. And I understand that it's turned cold and windy out there, so I guess this is one of those days I'm glad to be broadcasting inside.
Yes, sir. I have a couple quick questions for you.
Yeah.
I have a primrose jasmine hedge around my fence, and last year it froze back. I cut it down to the ground and came back perfect this year. And then I live up in Spring Branch, and with the cold weather a few weeks ago, we had, I think, down to 12 degrees at my house for 2 days.
I live west of Bernie, and I experienced the same thing.
Yeah, it's crazy. So the jasmine, I was expecting it to die. It didn't die, and then there's yellow flowers on it today. What's up with that?
Oh, that's totally normal. That's one of the beauties of primrose jasmine. If it doesn't, you know, totally freeze, it'll give you an immense showy yellow color. It only blooms once a year, but that's just a happy plant you've got there. The good thing, I guess, about when it got so cold back in January is that it wasn't prolonged. You know, back in 21, when my primrose jasmine froze back just like yours, it got below freezing and stayed there for 3 days. And, you know, at least with the cold we had this time, it was relatively brief. And even though it was severely cold, it didn't have time to chill the ground down that much. And most of the damage we got on things was cosmetic only. And if your primrose jasmine is like mine, you know, some of the leaves got a little bit burned by this year's cold, but apparently it did not affect those flower buds. And that's something you can look forward to every year if we don't. And we've gone for, you know, 30 years without a winter like we had in 21. So if you're new to the world of primrose jasmine, you're going to have a lot of yellow flowers to enjoy virtually every year in the early spring. Now, my only warning to you about primrose jasmine is it's one of those plants, and as they say, if you give it an inch, it will take a yard. If you haven't already discovered it, you know how those branches kind of arch out? Everywhere they touch the ground, they're going to form roots and make a new bush, and then it's going to grow up a bit, and then it's going to start branching out, and it will literally march across your yard about 2 feet a year until it fills the whole thing up. So, and once it gets really healthy and going, you're going to spend a little time, you know, every year. I wait until after the spring bloom and then get it there with a grubbing hoe and, you know, chop out where it's trying to move out into the yard. And anyway, I've got a lot of plants that I give to friends or, you know, other people around. So just beware. It's one of the friendly natives, but it can be quite aggressive. But those flowers are perfectly normal. If we don't have a really severe winter, you'll enjoy them every year about this time.
Awesome. Well, I just thought that it was weird that it didn't freeze and it got down to 12.
Well, it was brief, and you know I'll tell you, if you're on the organic program, which I imagine you are, your plants are in a whole lot better shape than they were when you bought them, because much as we wish, you know, they didn't, most of the growers use synthetic chemical fertilizers, which provide very little into the plants in the way of things that make them more cold hardy. Once you get those plants on an organic program, what we call the bricks, which is the sugar content of the sap goes up. The sugar in the sap acts like an antifreeze. So what you're going to find is that your plants, you know, are, after you've had them for a year or so, are going to be a lot more cold hardy when you first bought them from, you know, a nursery who just got them in from one of the big commercial growers. So you're just doing it right, and that's your reward for doing it right. And we're also fortunate that this year's cold wasn't as prolonged.
Awesome. I got two other quick questions really quick, if you don't mind.
Go right ahead.
One of my buddies has a bunch of chickens, and he gave me a bunch of chicken manure with some wood shavings in it.
Yeah.
I was going to throw it in my garden and till it in the soil before I plant my tomatoes. Is that a good idea or a bad idea?
Did he give you a lot of it or a little of it?
Probably about 40 pounds.
Okay. Well, spread it fairly thin. Chicken manure is fairly concentrated. We say that it's fairly hot, and it's great fertilizer. I mean, the fertilizer, pelletized fertilizer that you buy is probably a processed, somewhat composted poultry litter. So, chicken manure, gosh, it, other than being, you know, like I say, a little strong, it's very, very good. So, yeah, this is fine. It doesn't really matter whether you blend it in or whether you leave it on the surface. I'm not a big one for tilling a lot, because weed seeds can stay buried in the soil for years, and then when you turn the soil over with your tiller, bring the seeds up to the surface, all of a sudden you've got weeds like you've never seen before. So I'm much more of a no-till gardener, and I'll put the fertilizer down, and then I kind of turn it over, and it gets worked in as I plant. And if you're relatively new to gardening, the other thing I'll tell you to be sure and remember is not only use a good fertilizer like your chicken manure, but when you dig a hole for a tomato plant, put a handful of rock phosphate, powdered rock phosphate, in the bottom of the hole. It'll double the pounds of tomatoes, and don't mix it with the soil. You want to have that in a solid mass that the tomato grows its roots down through. But chicken manure is good stuff. Just don't use too much of it in one spot.
Gotcha. Appreciate the info. One last question. Like I said, I live up in Spring Branch, and I saw at the local tractor supply some crabapple trees, and I looked them up. Would those do well out where I live, or no?
Oh, you're borderline. Do you recall what the varieties were?
I want to say one was a Centurion crabapple.
Look and see if they will give you the chilling hours on the tag there somewhere. Where you are, you want a tree that is about 700 hours or less. 650 hours would be even better. You may be able to go online too and look up Centurion. That's not a variety that I'm familiar with. But if you get a crab apple that is down in the 550 to 650 hour range, you should do very well with it. You may end up making a raised area or raised bed to grow it in, because your soil might be as thin as mine. But there are a lot of crab apples that are higher chill that would do well in Fredericksburg, but not in Spring Branch. So whatever you're thinking about planting, whether it's peaches, whether it's crab apples, whether it's apples, those are the three crops that You've really got to watch the number of chill hours. Chill hours are how many hours of weather we get in the winter that are below 45 degrees, and you don't get any double benefit if it gets to 20 degrees. That's no better than 43 degrees is. But you need to, just anything you're buying in the way of fruit trees, check the amount of chill hours it takes. That's how much cool weather it has to take before the plant is able to bloom and therefore produce fruit. So that's going to be something for you to watch, like say anything you're doing on crab apples or peaches or apples. But if the Centurion, and like I say, that's just not one that I've grown, but if it is down in that 650 hour range, it should do fine for you in Spring Branch.
I appreciate the info, sir.
I appreciate your call this morning. Good luck with everything, Joey. Let me know how that chicken manure does for you.
We'll do.
Thank you. Goodbye. Well, it's 8:30 here, so let me get a quick break in, Julian. You will be up next. Looks like I get to talk about Southwest Metal Roofing Systems. And people always say, well, why do you talk about roofing companies on a garden show? And I always say, well, it's peace of mind. if you have a shingle roof on your home or a lower quality metal roof, I know you worry when they start talking about hail or high winds, severe cold, severe heat, all those things damage a standard shingle roof, and they do absolutely nothing to a Southwest Metal Roofing Systems roof. I've had one of the roofs on my home for, I guess, about 20 years now. Never called them a single time with a problem. We've had one for 12 or 15 years on the nursery here. We even had hailstones the size of baseballs one year, and you could barely find a dimple in that roof. Only problem we've ever had is when a big truck backed into it, and we just have to get them to come out and replace a couple of panels. But if you want a lifetime quality roof on your home, and if you're doing new construction, Southwest Metal Roofing Systems, well, they do new construction as well. So just tell your builder that you want Southwest Metal Roofing Systems to put the roof on your home. We did that on a groundwater district office when we built it 3 or 4 years ago up in Bernie, and let me tell you, beautiful roof that'll be there as long as the building is. Plus, they're energy efficient, save you money on your utility bills every month. Most homeowners insurance companies give you a discount because you've got a Southwest Metal Roofing Systems roof on your home. Learn more, check out all the different styles and colors. Give them a call at 210-822-6868. It's 210-822-6868 for Southwest Metal Roofing Systems.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550, KTSA, and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Next two callers going to be Julian and Cosette. That means there are two empty lines. You know how busy it gets later in the show. So if you got a question, don't put it off. Pick up the phone and dial the numbers, 210-599-5555. I say good morning, Julian.
Morning, sir.
Good morning.
I would just had a few questions. I was wondering,
that's what I'm here for.
Spray the orange oil vinegar molasses spray on zoysia.
If it's brown, absolutely. The only thing you have to remember is that it affects green foliage. But whether it's zoysia, whether it's Bermuda, whether it's a plant that's dropped its leaves for the winter, if you don't have any green foliage, you spray away with your vinegar and orange oil, and it'll take out the weeds without hurting your zoysia. What kind of zoysia do you have?
Well, I can't remember because I'm new to the yard as a yard person there.
Okay.
And I'm not sure what the landscaper put in.
Is it a narrow leaf or is it a broader leaf?
It's a narrow.
Okay, well then you got a really good one as long as you've got good sunlight. That's probably either Emerald or El Toro. And, it will make a beautiful yard for you. Zoysia is a grass that likes lots of fertilizer, so be sure you feed it 3 or 4 times a year with a good organic fertilizer. The only negative about the zoysias is if you want to cut them short, you almost have to get one of those expensive real-type mowers. If you're just going to grow it as a yard grass and let it get a little taller, it'll be one of the easiest maintenance grasses you've ever had. So you made a good choice there.
And then I wanted to ask about the asparagus. On the crowns, I planted 5 or 6 of them. Will those ever spread to cover up a 2-foot by, say, 10-foot bed, or will I need more crowns to cover that whole area?
2-foot by 10-foot bed, you should have bought 12 or 15 plants.
Gotcha. And, well, I can always add more around them. You know, that's
do it.
Deal.
do it. I think the ideal spacing on them is no more than 18 inches, and if you plant them as close as 12 inches, it's going to be years before they're really crowded. And keep in mind that even as a mature plant, each crown is only going to produce probably one, maybe two spears a day when it's in its picking season. So if you or your family really like asparagus, you're gonna be like me. You're going to be eating it all yourself before you even take it in the house. So good time to plant a little bit more. I'd get another 10 or 12 plants at least to go into that bed.
I had done where I had put the plastic down over the ground, and then I covered it up with some compost that I had got, you know, wholesale from a place, and then some other bags that I got acquired from Adams, you know, chicken manure, horse manure. Well, I raised up that area, and then I covered each side with a black felt to keep that coastal out, because, you know, that stuff's wicked.
Amen.
And everything's done really well. Do you still consider that in-ground planting?
I'm
getting all the beneficial microbes. I can see worms coming in there, you know, from the ground.
I wish that you had put the plastic down to kill the grass and then taken it back up.
I did, of course. Yeah. I made up mounds with that compost, you know, 3 foot wide by 25 deep, and then I covered in my walking lanes and around the outside of it with that black felt that has that yellow strip on it.
Yeah.
And it really blocked out all that coastal from coming in. Now I just have the garden beds in the middle. I'm just wondering, do you still consider that in-the-ground gardening?
Oh, that's raised bed in-ground gardening, and you did it exactly right. You get a gold star for that. You did it just like I would have.
And I planted, 50 fruit trees up here in the front of my house area when I just moved out here 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided, man, that coastal is too wicked. I can't even water these trees because it's just coming in like crazy. So I wanted to black felt around it. It's probably maybe, you know, 10 trees deep by 4 or 5 rows. It's kind of a compacted, multi-orchard, you know, peaches, plums, all different kinds of. And so I wanted to go 6-10 inches deep on the wood chips or native mulch, and then cover around the outside with that black felt so I didn't have to weed eat and mow. I can spend more time with my family. You think that'll work as long as I keep the root flares, you know, exposed?
Oh, that'll be fine for your trees, but you're going to find that coastal is going to be a pain, you know, for years to come.
Through, even if I cover it down just like I did the garden?
It will, but it's going to be not nearly as thick and not nearly as hard to control. Where it comes up through your mulch, just, you know, have that vinegar and orange oil spray ready. It's not going to cause any harm to your fruit trees. You know, you don't want to spray it on the foliage.
Yeah.
But just be prepared to be fighting that coastal. Eventually, it'll be less of a problem because as your fruit trees get bigger and thicker, coastal likes the sun. And if your fruit trees grow like I think they will, you're going to get shadier and shadier around them. So it's going to give you some help, but you're doing the best you can, but an old coastal field is a tough place to plant a garden or anything else for the first few years because that is a very tenacious grass.
So I'll just covering it with the witches. I might have to reapply every year until it just kind of chokes it out if I can because that is a hungry feeder.
Well, yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, be sure that you give your trees the nutrients they need. But your wood chips are going to break down. They're actually going to add to the quality of the soil. They're going to cool the soil. So you're getting a lot of benefits in addition to your suppression of the coastal. But, and, you know, the nice thing about wood chips is basically they're free. Most every town has a brush dump, so to speak, where they chip things up and, you know, I always tip the guy there with a front-end loader for, you know, putting in the back of my truck or trailer or whatever else. But you don't have to go out and buy, you know, an expensive there are better mulches, of course, that you can buy.
Well, that's
but
what
if
I was thinking about getting the one at a, you know, a place, a native mulch that they've already got chopped up, little semi-broken down, and it's going to create a nice thatch mat to actually lock down everything. I was actually going to run paper underneath there first. That's how I kind of did some of the garden, too. And not only I tried the plastic method, but I did paper under there, and it blocked out everything pretty well. But
that's
what I'm just trying to do on the size of the orchard.
I don't want to cut that grass anymore. I don't want to see it.
Well, even around your trees, paper or cardboard is a great thing to put down a few layers of, because it's gonna dissolve away, and it's not going to create the long-lasting problem. It still lets oxygen through, which is the most important thing. That's the biggest negative about plastic. It doesn't let moisture out, and it doesn't let oxygen in. So around the edges, just fine. But in the garden itself, feel free to use cardboard or newspaper, and then put your wood chips on top of it and just renew them every chance you get. The old Malcolm Beck did an experiment years ago where he took a pile of wood chips and went out in the middle of July, and he checked the temperature of the soil out in the sun, and it was like 145 degrees. He went and put a soil thermometer down through his wood chips to the soil underneath, and the soil temperature was 82. So you don't have to be a genius to figure out where the plant's roots are happiest. So, yeah, those wood chips, even though they're not supplying a lot of nutrient until they really break down, they give you the benefit of keeping the soil cooler in the summer, warmer in the winter. It's great for weed suppression. You're doing a lot of good things there. Keep up the good work, and just realize you're going to be fighting that coastal for a few years no matter what you do.
And I was trying to think, man, these trees had really struggled since I put them in because, you know, the ground gets so hot out here. I'm kind of near Lavernia, and that clay soil can dry up before you know it. And some of these trees have got a couple cankers down at the bottom. So I'm thinking, man, this is really going to benefit them more than anything. Keep that ground cool, keep the moisture in.
Absolutely. I hope you had somebody advising you on your fruit tree selections because, like my previous caller, peaches especially, it's very important to know about chilling hours and get the right varieties. It's very important that you know about pruning and thinning, because this is the time of year, even on younger trees. The first year you thin to create the overall shape of the tree, which you want. It's kind of like a goblet, sort of a martini glass look that's open, centered, and relatively thin. And then every year after that, you're going to go through and not really do any pruning, but you're going to go through and thin. Your plums, if you planted those, you're going to thin out by about 60%. Your peaches, you're going to thin out by about 50% at least every year. You're not going to touch pears or apples because you make them more disease susceptible if you prune them very much at all. So a lot to know about an orchard, and feel free to call anytime you've got questions. We're always here to help you.
Thank you so much for your information, sir. You have a great day.
You do the same, and congratulations on your work. I can tell you one thing for sure. You're not going to have to join any health clubs. You're going to get all the exercise you need between your garden and your orchard. You have a good day, Julian.
And I work outside. I do landscaping lawn service, so yeah. That's all I do is walk around outside.
You know, it's funny that my engineer back at the station and I were just talking off the air, and he made the comment. He said, the skinniest I ever was back when I worked as a landscaper. And I said, well, you know, try doing like I do, work in the plant business and then go home to a few hundred acres of land where you've got to cut cedar and mend fences and things. And sure makes for a healthy lifestyle, though, and I hope you enjoy it as much as we do.
I hope you live as long as you can. God bless you.
And you as well, Julian. You and your family have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk again. Cosette, hang on just a minute while I talk for a moment about Dr. Mark Williamson. Again, just a wonderful man out there. And, I can't say many people really enjoy going to the dentist, but I can tell you that going to Dr. Williamson's office is a pleasurable experience. You feel like you're a family member, not like a patient. He's not looking forward to the next person in the chair. He's not working at how many people he can see in a day. He's working at giving you the dental care you need, and he is so competent and so broadly trained, I can't imagine anything he's going to send you out to a specialist for. So many dentists, if it's anything beyond cleaning and filling, they want you to go see somebody else. Well, Dr. Williamson is that somebody else. He's a man among men and a dentist among dentists. He's, like I say, so broadly trained and just runs a wonderful office. He worked with Dr. Ed Staffel, who was a good friend for many years, and I tell you, the two of them really teamed up and figured out how dentistry should be practiced. If you're new to the area, if you're looking for a new dentist, if you just want to meet one of the best dentists you'll ever meet, you need to check out his office, Dr. Williamson and Associates. Phone number is 341-2569. That's area code 210-341-2569. Office is out off Cherry Ridge, Northwest San Antonio. Easy to find and a great place to find. The offices of Dr. Williamson and Associates.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, let's get back to gardening. Cosette is first in line, then it'll be Elisa and Rosa. Cosette is first. Good morning, Cosette.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. I'm off to a good start. It's getting a little windy, and I know it's getting a little chillier out there, but that calendar tells me it's still February, so which is just wishful thinking if we expect anything different. We just get a lot of pretty days, and between a few of them, only have to wear that jacket.
Come on, spring.
Amen. What's going on today?
So, after the big freeze of 2021, I bought an Arctic Frost Satsuma.
Okay.
It was probably a foot to 2 feet tall, maybe. It is my baby. However, 2 years ago, I found one flower on it. I was very excited. The flower fell off. I've been fertilizing regularly. Maybe I'm not putting enough around it. I do it Valentine's Day, Memorial Day, Labor Day, and I use a good organic fertilizer. But last year during a freeze, I had it wrapped in some frost cloth and a piece of it came open and it was too cold for me to brave the weather. So the top half of the tree froze and I gave it time, but I had to cut off the top half. So I've got some shoots around it. It's west facing, and unfortunately, I planted it maybe in the wrong spot because when fronts come through, it is exposed to the north winds. But I've got shoots that are 5 feet tall, a little over 5 feet tall. The ones that are on the west facing side of the plant are maybe 3-4 feet tall. Yesterday I noticed leaves were falling off of it and I thought, well, maybe a few, you know, froze because of the storm, the freeze. But then I noticed something is eating the leaves off right at the base. So I mixed up some BT and I sprayed the plant really thoroughly. I believe I put 1/2 ounce to a 32 ounce spray bottle of water.
That's fine.
And so how do I get it to fruit and flower and fruit this year?
Well, number one, you need to look very carefully at the tree and any of those shoots that are coming out down toward ground level. They're probably shoots coming off the rootstock rather than off the Arctic Frost portion of the tree. So examine it very carefully. When you start seeing a lot of shoots coming, and especially if those shoots are a little bit flatter stemmed and if they have big thorns, that's not Arctic Frost. That is the rootstock sprouting out, and it happens a lot when the top of the plant gets stressed, which is what happens, you know, when you get a little bit of freeze damage. So I'm not necessarily happy that you got lots of growth coming out because I'm afraid a bunch of that may be coming off the rootstock. And if you don't cut that off and do it soon, all the Arctic Frost portion of the tree will die out and you know, you won't get any benefit from it. So do that today or whenever you're out in the yard again.
Well, I did check, and you're right, because, okay, so they're touted to have been grafted onto their own rootstock. So supposedly it's Arctic Frost Satsuma tree rootstock. However, after last year's freeze, when I had to cut the top half off, I did see a shoot coming from down at the rootstock, and it looked nothing like the leaves on the upper part of the tree. So I
Yeah, you did the right thing. I can't imagine why they would want to graft Arctic Frost to Arctic Frost. If you want to grow Arctic Frost on its own rootstock, you grow it from cuttings. So I think somebody may not be telling the whole truth on the subject, and you keep your eyes open because you'll know fairly quickly. The Arctic Frost will have a little smaller leaf, will have a little bit rounder stem, and it will have short thorns, not long thorns. So anything that doesn't match up with that, use the pruning shears on it immediately. Now, your tree is obviously mature because it did have a flower on it. If it's getting west sun, it's getting plenty of sunlight. Our big problem the past couple of years has been that we have had late freezes that froze the buds before they could open. Hopefully, you know, with the kind of cold we've had this year, and we've had a fairly chilly fall, Hopefully those buds weren't far enough along to be damaged by the freeze. So we're going to know in about a month or 6 weeks, and should get plenty of flowers. And since it's out where the bees and things can get to it, you should get good pollination. And I would expect a bit of fruit this year from, you know, from the portion of the tree that survived the freeze. But get anything that you think is rootstock cut away immediately, so the tree will be putting all of its energy into the Arctic frost portion of it.
From the base, how far up does the rootstock typically go?
You can generally spot the graft point. You know, pull the soil back away from the base, and you'll generally have a straight trunk coming up, and then you'll have a little jog out to one side, because actually most of the fruit tree growers are not actually grafting. They're doing what we call budding, and they're inserting the bud for what they want to grow into the side of the seedling rootstock and then cutting the top off of it. So you can normally see kind of a little bit of an odd shape, where it is up, you know, somewhere between 1 and 4 inches, and then it sort of makes a jog to one side and continues growing up. That is your graft point.
Okay, so I've got it, because at the very base, I see it's like a little bit different color and it's bulkier. So from where it's planted in the ground, I don't have any limbs. I've trimmed anything 10 inches and below.
So well, it's going to be like anything an inch and below, I would imagine.
Okay.
Yeah. Look at that. So, look at that trunk real carefully, because only in the case of some nut trees are things usually, it's called top working, where, you know, they're grafted further up. All the citrus that I've ever seen, and that's a lot of citrus, is grafted very close to ground level. So I'm afraid 10 inches up is a little too high. You may not have to go all the way to the ground, but get down and examine it very closely. And where you see a change in the thickness of the trunk or the texture of the bark, or where it just looks like it suddenly changed, that's your graft point. And everything below that point or right at that point needs to come off.
Okay, and what's the best way to get it? Because it, except for flowering, having that one flower 2 years ago, it hasn't flowered at all.
Well, again, just hope that we don't get a late freeze. I don't think the lack of flowers is because of anything you have failed to do. But the fruit trees, the citrus trees, form their little buds very early when you can't even see them. They're called bud primordia. And they are what eventually comes out, makes an obvious bud, blooms, and then hopefully has fruit. Past 2 years, we have had a late freeze where those buds, even though they weren't real obvious yet, those buds froze, and so there weren't any buds there to open. And, you know, that's been a problem with trees, you know, way beyond the citrus family the past couple of years. But hopefully this year is going to be better. I don't think it's anything that you're failing.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now, 210-599-5555.
All right, back to gardening, and Cosette is still there. Cosette, I'm sorry that sounder kicked in a little bit before it was supposed to.
No problem at all.
But anyway, I don't think the lack of flowers is caused by anything that you're failing to do. You're giving it good bright sun, which it needs. You're fertilizing it regularly, which it needs. We just need to get any of the shoots coming out that are off the rootstock, we need to get them out so the plant can put its full energy into the Arctic frost portion of the plant. And we should know in the next 4 to 6 weeks. It's just now getting time. You know, we've got lots of fruit trees here at the nursery, and or lots of citrus, and none of them are really budding out yet. So it's a little bit early to expect flower buds, but all you need to do is prune properly, fertilize and water, and check back with me in a couple of weeks, and we'll see how things look at that point.
Okay, what do you think is eating the leaves off right where they grow, right at the base?
I saw a
moth in there.
Yeah, using the BT, you've taken care of any caterpillar problems, and there are caterpillars that specialize in citrus, so to speak, but it could also be a mouse, it could also be a beetle. There are various creatures that find citrus leaves to be tasty. I give it a little while. Hopefully it'll stop. Hopefully it was caterpillar, and if it was, your BT will take care of it. If it turns out to be something more, we can talk about how to control rodents and things. If you want to be on the safe side, get a little bit of blood meal. It's a good repellent and also a good fertilizer. There are no negatives to it except that it does stink, and you don't want your dogs to get into it, or it might give them a little gastric distress, shall we say. But you can put some blood meal around as a repellent in case it is a squirrel or a mouse. But at this point, your BT is probably taking care of it.
Okay, awesome. And around the base of it, can I add uh-huh. more soil to it, like a soil compost mixture?
You can put that over the root zone, but you should have the soil down low enough that you can actually see the major roots coming out the side of the trunk. You don't want to put okay. any soil above that point. We call it the root flare, and it's very important that it be exposed enough to have air circulation around it.
Okay, I didn't know if that applied to fruit trees, but I guess that makes sense.
It applies to every woody plant, whether it's a shrub or a tree. It does not apply to palm trees, which are in a whole different world. It does not apply to cycads like sago palms, but every other woody plant out there it most definitely applies to.
Well, awesome. I'll call you back in 2 or 3 weeks. Maybe I'll have some flowers.
I will look forward to hearing from you.
All right, take care, Bob.
You do the same. Thank you so much. All right, next in line is Elisa. Good morning, Elisa.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, I have something that happened that I'm curious about. I had, after a rain, I had an ant pile, uh-huh. and when it dried, I put some cayenne pepper over it, which usually takes care of them, and I had a swarm of bees come and just ate up the cayenne pepper.
That's so odd.
It was very odd. It was something I've never seen before. I don't know if they're starving or what, but I mean, it was hundreds of them. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. And so the next morning it was all gone, including the ants. The ants were gone. So I'm like, is it okay to put cayenne pepper on the flower buds of your plants in summer and spring?
There's nothing in cayenne that would hurt anything, and it's a good repellent. Birds don't taste heat, so pepper doesn't repel birds at all. That's why things like the Flaming Hot Birdseed that I love is, the pepper oil's so hot in there, the guys that produce it have to wear hazmat suits. The birds love it, but the squirrels don't come around. So, cayenne pepper may actually help you in keeping rodents away from it, but, and the bees that came look like ordinary honeybees?
Yes, sir.
That is most odd. I know a couple of beekeepers, and I'll ask them about that, but I can't.
It was the strangest thing I'd ever seen.
It must have been some bees from the far south that really specialize in high-heat meals, but I've never heard of that. I'll certainly ask some friends, but that's news to me. As a matter of fact, I'm making a note as we go to ask Howard Garrett about that next week if he's ever seen that up in Dallas. But that's it's not a problem. Bees many times are good pollinators, and in fact, the mason bees are even better than the honeybees. So they're good things to have around. But you've told me something I've never heard before. I'll look forward to investigating it.
Yeah, I tried to look it up online and I couldn't find anything. So yeah. That'll be interesting. But anyways, I wanted to see if it was okay to put it on my plants if the bees were I don't know if it'll attract them again or not.
I will be interested in here, but no, there's nothing at all wrong with it. As a matter of fact, pepper juice is used as a repellent for many things. I wish we had a company making. We used to get a product called garlic pepper tea. Now you have to make it yourself. So. It's just an unusual anomaly. You use it wherever you see fit, but wash your hands before you rub your eyes or any other tender areas, that's for sure.
Okay. I have another question. Mm-hmm. Speaking of bees, I can tolerate them, but I'm actually terrified of them. I was stung in my face when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
So I know I need them, but I prefer to attract ladybugs if I can. I know they're pollinators as well, I'm told. Mm-hmm. Is there Yeah, how do you track them?
Ladybugs aren't, I wouldn't really call them much as pollinators, but even hummingbirds, even butterflies, things like that, there are plenty of other pollinators out there. One of the best repellents of bees is garlic. You know, just garlic juice. You could squeeze your own garlic if you had a garlic press. But their products, one of them is called Mosquito Barrier. The other is just called Garlic Barrier. You could get that and spray around periodically. And it's probably not going to scare off every bee, but you don't want to scare off every bee. You just want to, you just don't want to be swarmed by them, so to speak. But that's probably the best repellent you will find.
Okay. Okay. Can I ask one more question?
You can, but let me tell you one other thing first. It would be good to know if you have, you know, any real allergic reaction to the bee venom. The pain is one thing, but something about the venom the bees have triggers a very bad and very, you know, can be fatal response in people that don't even know that they are allergic to it. Our good friend Dr. Kirby, that'll be on the air with me in a couple of hours, had a very, very bad reaction and wound up with some immediate emergency medical care when he got stung because he even had beehives in his backyard. So if you, you know, ask your doctor if he thinks that you are allergic to bees, you should keep a little something called an EpiPen that you can give yourself if you do have a severe sting. The one other thing that should reassure you a bit is that these very aggressive bees that they call Africanized bees that have moved up out of Mexico, when they are foraging, when they're around the garden or the flowers and things like that, they're no more aggressive, no more dangerous than a European honeybee. You just want to be very careful that you don't disturb their colony wherever they are. So in general, unless you're allergic, bees are there's something to be wary of, but not to be terrified of. And that's easy to say for somebody that's not terrified of rattlesnakes or most anything else out there. I don't like spiders, but do ask your doctor just to be on the safe side. Be sure you're not allergic. But where you want to repel them, garlic is a safe and natural thing you can use.
Okay. All right. I'll keep that in mind.
Now that other question. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. I have a patch of dirt. It's underneath a big tree. I don't know what kind of tree it is. It's just a big tree that blooms every spring and summer. And underneath it is a clay-like dirt. It's different than the dirt around it. It's really strange. It's like it's its own ecosystem. And my cats love to lay under it during the summer, and I keep it wet for them.
Uh-huh.
But I'd like to find something that might bloom and be pretty, or a vegetable. I don't know if there's anything I can plant underneath there.
So is it fairly shady?
It's really shady during the spring and summer. Of course, it's here now. But
There are lots of things you could plant out there that would be pretty. Your kitty cats may want to curl up on top of them and crush them. But if you're looking for flowers, you could do impatiens or begonias, foliages. You could do coleus. You could plant caladiums. There are lots of different things that will tolerate the shade. In fact, we have a shade list. If you're ever by Shades of Green, just ask for our shade list, and we'll give you a long list of things you could plant underneath there. If it's really shady, unfortunately, catnip is probably going to not do real well. But out in a sunnier area, sure, grow some kitty drugs, we call them, some catnip, and they'll have fun with it. They eat it, and it's actually a good appetite stimulant. If you ever have an older cat that's not eating well, catnip can be a good medicinal thing to have around. But no, there are lots of things you can plant in the shade, and there's some perennials as well, some things that you wouldn't have to replant. There's some salvias that will grow in the shade. There are lots and lots of options, so you don't have to put up with just bare clay-like dirt.
Okay, all right. I appreciate it. Yeah, I take care of my cats. I haven't seen a squirrel or a mouse around here for years. So they take good care of me, so I take good care of them. So.
Well, we appreciate it. I love my kitty cats just like we do our puppy dogs. And they're characters. They are... we won't go down that road. I just love that Dr. Kirby says probably the shortest book ever written is What We Know About Cat Psychology. So you enjoy your kitties in your garden, and you call anytime I can help you.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Elisa. Goodbye. All right, let's get a break in here, and then Rosa will be next. Looks like I get to talk to you about Fanix Nursery and Garden Center, and several bits of news for you about Fanix. Number one, they put all their houseplants on sale for 30% off, and that's going to last all the way through February. The other thing is, if you're looking for tomatoes, Fanix has 40 varieties of tomatoes and 15 varieties of peppers already in, along with fruit trees, even multi-grafted fruit trees. They've got the shade trees that will qualify for CPS Energy's rebate program. And also, they've just gotten a big new shipment of the Ego lithium-ion battery-powered outdoor equipment. Some different things Ego has come up with. You might want to take a look at there. They've got onions. They've got seed potatoes. They've got all the organic gardening supplies I talk about. They've got fertilizers and compost and mulches. You know, oldest nursery in San Antonio, 85 years celebrated this year. You might want to check their website, fannicnursery.com, just to see some of the special events they're going to be having. Located where they've been for all those years, over on Home Green Road, open 7 days a week to serve you at Fanix Nursery and Garden Center.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster.
News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening on this morning when the weather's kind of taking a little change, gotten a little windier, a little bit cooler. Just means you need to put on a jacket when you go outside. I'm going to talk next to Rosa, and then I've got a bunch of open lines. So if you can get a busy signal, real good time to dial 210-599-5555. I say good morning, Rosa.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I hope I remember them. Let me see.
That's why you need to write them down.
No, I'm trying real fast here. But I'm talking about my hydrangeas. I have in this black plastic tub. And okay. They're beautiful, you know, in the summer. Mm-hmm. And now I put them in the storeroom. And they kind of froze. Some of them froze. Will they come back?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hydrangeas are, you know, totally cold hardy. They'll go down probably close to zero without damage. And sometimes I think it makes them even bloom better in the spring. Do you have the big colorful ones, or do you have the one that's called Alice Oakleaf, the Oakleaf hydrangea varieties?
I don't know, but it has great big white flowers, and then sometimes they're green.
Yeah, well, they start out white and then they get a little bit green colored, but no, they should be fine. You don't normally even have to bring them in. Perfectly normal for them to drop their leaves in the winter, and even if they freeze back by 2/3, they come right back out. So be sure they're in good soil, get very regular water and fertilizer, and they should be beautiful for you again this spring.
So it's all right to plant them now, you think, in the ground?
Oh, I would say so. Yeah, put them in a shady spot. A little morning sun's fine, but no hot afternoon sun. But hydrangeas, other than the fact that they're water hogs, that they take more water than just about anything else in the yard, but I'm not going to tell saws, so you plant your hydrangeas and enjoy them.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, I'm so glad. And how about tomatoes? Do we plant them now?
I'm not. Some people are. But again, I live north of San Antonio. I live up outside of Bernie, and we're probably going to have frost next Tuesday morning. So a lot of people are buying tomatoes, but, you know, and it's just a gamble. I mean, a couple of dollars for a tomato plant. If it freezes, it freezes. You can plant another one, or you can cover them. But I don't usually start planting them till about the 1st of March. But there are an awful lot of people planting them and planning on covering them and gambling just a little bit, hoping they'll have the first tomatoes in the neighborhood. But that calendar says it's still pretty early in February, so tomatoes are going to wait a little while in my garden.
Okay, well, I'll wait. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You are certainly welcome, Rosa. Thank you for the call. All right. Looks like my next callers are Todd and Tony and John. Switching from the girls to the guys now. Good morning, Todd.
Hi, Bob. This is Todd. Thanks for taking my call. Tried 20 times, so 20 times is the right number to get into.
Either that or call in really early when nobody else is up and awake. But glad you got through. How can I help?
I've got a fig tree that I need to transplant. That's a long story. And so I dug it up yesterday and got all the root ball really good, but there were three roots, you know, about your pinky finger width that I could just not get. So I ended up cutting them off. So I'm wondering, is this, it's a 2-year-old fig. We haven't had much luck getting figs on it. I don't know if it's us or the animals getting it, but I'm wondering if it's even worth transplanting it now, or if I, because I had to cut those roots. Or
no, it's fine. Figs are hardy, hardy plants. Get it back in the ground as quickly as you can. And in addition to watering the soil every day, even, you know, 4 or 5 times a day, pick up your hose and just spray it coming down on the limbs of the fig tree. It will absorb a lot of moisture directly through. Put a little Garrett juice or a little Super Thrive on, you know, when you water it in. But figs are tough. You know, I'd give you at least a 99% chance it's going to come through just fine if you keep up with the water. And if you, like I say, just keep spraying down the top of it, because that'll let it absorb moisture. As you've noticed, I'm sure figs have a much softer bark than something like an oak tree. Yeah. So while it's getting those roots reestablished and replacing those three that you had to cut, you want to just keep spraying the top so it can sort of get a little ivy through the bark, and I'm, you know, like I say, just virtually certain it's going to come out just fine. Replace it or replant it in a place that gets at least half a day of sun. Full sun is fine as well, but if you're not getting many figs, it probably was in too much shade.
Okay, yeah, it was on the side of the house. We'd heard they like protection, but yet it's just not working.
Well, it just needs to be an area that gets some sun. A little protection from the north wind is fine, but too close and too big an overhang, that's going to give you a nice fig bush, so to speak, but not much fruit. So, yeah, try to get it out where it gets some good sun. A little protection from the north wind is always nice, but not absolutely mandatory.
Okay. And quick question on cross vines. I've got some that are doing really well. How do you trim those, or do you not?
Well, it's up to you. Anytime you trim, you know, crossvine, is yours the kind of orangey one they call Tangerine Beauty?
The trumpets are
okay.
Orange. Yeah,
it's a wonderful plant. There are a couple of native ones that are other colors, but that's by far the best. They bloom heavily in the spring, and then they sort of scatter some blooms through the summer. So yeah. you can trim them as much as you like if you need to. They don't have to be trimmed, but I would wait until after they bloomed in the spring. Enjoy that spring flowering, and then get out there and trim them as heavily as you need to. You're not going to bother them one bit.
Okay. And then last question, I got a raised bed above ground, I think a bed shrug or something. How often do you have to swap out the soil versus just adding compost to it?
Never. Never.
Okay.
No. The soil under your feet out in this area has been there for probably around 10,000 years or so. And so soil doesn't wear out. People that aren't very smart, unlike you and me, that dump all the chemical fertilizers and all this other junk, they can destroy the organic material in the soil and wear it out, so to speak. But soil improves over time. You never really have to switch it out. Just keep on doing what you're doing, and keep adding a little compost every now and then. Stay organic with your fertilizers, and it'll get better instead of worse.
Okay. Well, thanks, Bob. I really appreciate your insights every week.
It's my pleasure, Todd. I appreciate you calling. You get out and have a wonderful Super Bowl Sunday.
All right.
Thank you.
I'll be putting that fig.
All right, sir. Fig, I hope we'll give you plenty of figs this summer. Tony's next in line. Good morning, Tony.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Hey, my question is about a pecan tree. I have a 60-plus-year-old, 70-foot-tall pecan tree.
Very good.
I've been having some limbs dropping from it. It greens up real nice, blooms real well, and, you know, even get pecans from it. But it leans towards my house about 15 feet up. It has a bend in it, and the majority of the leaves are, or the branches lean towards my house. It's near up the back fence of my backyard, so it's, you know, the power line's going across. So, of course, the city come through and cut those down, so it's not shaped really, really well. My concern is possibly falling. Should I get some of that weight cut out the top? And at what point would I be looking at taking the thing down?
I don't think you ever take it down. Pecans are a good, strong tree. They are our state tree, and gosh, you know, I've got pecan trees that are probably 200 years old. They do shed limbs every now and then. So my advice to you, don't call a tree trimmer. Call an arborist, a guy who really knows trees. Are you in the San Antonio area?
Yes, I'm your
fan. The man I call when I have questions about trees, his name is David Vaughn, V-A-U-G-H-A-N. Yes. If you Google Vaughn Arbor Care, he worked for one of the best tree companies in this area for many years, and then he turned a certain age and said, you know, I don't have to work this hard anymore. So these days he just does consulting. He's not going to try to sell you anything because he doesn't have anything to sell but a little bit of his time, but he's very, very reasonable. I would call David, and you might start by just taking a good picture that you can text to him. That may be all he needs, or you may want to have him come out and take a look with you and say, and, you know, he'll tell you, you know, I'd take out this limb. Typically, we take out the limbs that form very narrow angles with other limbs or with the trunk, because those are the ones that are likely to, you know, break off in an ice storm or snowstorm or real high wind. But I'm sitting here looking out the back window of our nursery at a pecan tree that leans over one of our greenhouses, and I have no concerns about it whatsoever. So it would be good to get somebody to take a look at it, but don't call somebody who's going to try to sell you, you know, a hack, whack, and stack job. Call David at least and see what he would suggest, and I think you can trust completely what he tells you.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks for that advice.
You're certainly welcome. I appreciate the call. Thank you, sir. All right, let's see here. Yes, it is time that we should take a break here. And, Jimmy, I don't have any lives. Run those recordings, and we'll be right back with more phone calls.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. It's kind of one of those typical Sunday mornings where we go from having the lines absolutely full, all four lines, to having not a lot of callers on there. So if you've been getting a busy signal, give me a call, 210-599-5555. John's the only one holding, so you probably get right through while I say good morning, John.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Quick question.
All right.
I was looking on. Can you hear me okay?
Just loud and clear.
All right. I was looking online at Harry Garrett's thick tree treatment.
Right.
And I saw that Maestro Grow, I think it was, makes a bag of that ready to sell. Do you handle that?
No, we don't, as a matter of fact. I didn't realize that, you might check and be sure that that's not an old post. Maestro Grow is, they make a fertilizer for us, but, next time I talk to Chris, it's different owners than it used to be, and, I'll ask Chris, if they do indeed have that, but I was not aware that they're still packaging that, so let me check on that. I'm not sure if they are or not, but I'll sure find out for you.
Okay. I was just curious, because instead of buying all that stuff separate, it sounded like they already had it all together.
Yeah, and I know back in the old days, Gardenville did that, and they put it all together, but I know they don't package it anymore. But if they have it available, I will certainly get it, but they've never mentioned it to me, and like I say, We do a lot of business with Maestro Grove, so
yeah.
let me find that out for you, and check with me in a few days, and I'll let you know. But realize you don't have to do the whole package, but it is certainly more convenient if you get it mixed together. So let me find out for you. I was not aware that they're still packaging that.
Well, it may be an old post. I don't know. All right, I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Well, I appreciate the call this morning, and like I say, I'll get an answer for you on that. I might get a note right here, so we'll get it if it's available, and I do appreciate the call. Let me see here real quickly. It looks like next up is going to be Diane and then Mary. Good morning, Diane.
Hello?
That was that's the shortest wait you've ever had, right?
Yes, sir, it is.
you're on the air. How can I help you?
I have a very old bag of Scott's lawn fertilizer that I'm trying to get rid of, and I don't know how to dispose of it. I don't want to use it on my lawn.
You're very wise. technically, you could always... take it to the household hazardous waste, they would probably be offended if they heard me telling you that. Just put it in the garbage, you know. It's I can't think of any real beneficial use, but it's not toxic. It's just a product that is bad for your plants rather than good for them. Well, I shouldn't say that. It's bad for the soil, which in turn will ultimately be bad for the plants. But it's not something that they would get mad at you for putting in the garbage can.
Okay, I was just afraid to put fertilizer in the trash. But
no, it's
safe, then I'll go ahead and do that.
Yeah, that's in my opinion, that's the best thing you could possibly do with it.
Okay. Do you know if the Bandera or Bernie area have a hazard waste?
Unfortunately,
San Antonio does.
Yeah, unfortunately, they Bernie does occasionally have. Kendall County does not. I tried to organize one up there, and I just had a lot of trouble getting support for it. But the city of Bernie doesn't really have a location, but I know they have periodically when they can get somebody to pay for it. Other than them, they do periodically do hazardous waste pickup. Are you in the county or are you in the city proper?
I'm in Pipe Creek.
You're in Pipe Creek.
I'm up the road from you. Yeah.
I didn't say this out loud, so don't tell anybody I did. If you've got any friends in Bernie, you could give it to them next time they have a household hazardous waste day. You'd have to call the city because they have to pay a qualified company to dispose of this stuff, and it's a fair amount of money. And at one point, I think Waste Management was helping out the city of Bernie and giving them a reduced rate, and they were having those days periodically. But just call the city and ask them if they're, you don't have to tell them where you live, but just tell them that you have property around there and you are interested, and then perhaps you can find a friend in Bernie that will give you permission to put it with their household hazardous waste, so to speak. That's probably, I'm not very politically correct, and that's probably not a politically correct thing to tell you, but that's what I'd look at doing. And like I say, I don't know if they have one scheduled. They should, but the leadership in Bernie has changed recently, and sometimes we might think it's not for the better. I'll just leave it at that before I get in any more trouble. But every city should have, household hazardous waste disposal, and I wish, I'm sorry to say, San Antonio requires you to, show proof that you live here before you can take things there.
Yeah.
And if it's just small quantities, then there may be other things you can do. I suspect that, like old pharmaceuticals, I imagine HEB Pharmacy will take it back. Most pharmacies will take and dispose of old pharmaceuticals. If it's drugs or things like that, believe it or not, we've got a great sheriff's department up there, and I think you probably do too in Pipe Creek. They will take and dispose of perhaps compounds that might not be legal, and we'll leave it at that, and they do that at no charge. So if you have people out there that'll help you, but basic household hazardous waste, sometimes we're pretty much on our own there.
Yeah, I found some, like the oil, I know Walmart and AutoZone will take the oil, but I have not found a place for antifreeze. Antifreeze or that fertilizer were the two problems that I have.
Yeah, check with one of the oil change places. They might take antifreeze. I honestly don't know, but that's a real good question. I wish I could give you more information on that. I'll see what I can find out.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
I appreciate you, Diane. Thank you kindly. Next in line is Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Bob, and happy game day to you.
To you as well. I have to admit, I'll probably be out in the sunshine.
Get up to go watch that.
Let's see. I think I've got cows to feed and fence to fix, but if I get all that done, then maybe I'll look at that. But don't be counting on it. Don't call me for a score update.
Right. Okay,
what's going on today?
I have 14 feral cats that have befriended me because I feed them twice a day, and I have a 10 4-foot fence between me and the neighbor. Well, I like to clean that fence very well of all the weeds and stuff, and all the dirt comes out. It looks nice. But mm-hmm. the feral cats like that for their businesses.
Sure.
So is there anything that I can throw there to keep them away from there, from using that?
You know, every cat is different. And I'm sitting here with one curled up in the box on my desk. You can't even see her head above the top of the box. She's so coiled tightly. But many cats.
Did you look up at her when you said that?
No, she's just, Marigold's head is still buried down there. But many cats don't like the smell of lavender. That's one thing that you could try. Oh, golly. And Will, I tell you what, let me make a note, ask Dan about what his current favorite cat repellent is. There's a company called Liquid Fence that makes a dog and cat repellent. From what I understand, it has a strong enough odor. It might be a people repellent, too. There's another company called I Must Garden. You might go on their website and see if they have a dog and cat repellent. But those would be your best bets. Now, there's still, you can find, and I don't know exactly where to tell you to look, but they make a little lawn sprinkler thing that's called the Scarecrow, and it has a motion sensor in it, and you can set it up in a place where you don't want animals, you know, on your lawn or whatever, and this people use it for deer all the time. And if this thing detects motion, it sends a strong blast of water out. And it works pretty effectively. You have to, of course, you know, take some precautions when you get below freezing. But if you can find one of those, and you probably would find that maybe, oh gosh, ask Patty Martin over at the Little Nature Store in Bernie if she, you know, has them, or maybe Wild Birds Unlimited. I'll ask next time I see Kyle. But they just call it a scarecrow, but it's good for scaring neighbors and things as well if they cut across your yard. But that probably, yeah, that would probably be the best suggestion I could for your feral kitties.
All right. Thank you so much for your information, Bob. And you have a wonderful day. Don't get too busy out there in your yard.
Well, it'll be a great day no matter what, but I appreciate the call and appreciate you. Thank you so much. Jimmy, let's get a break done here, and we'll be right back with more phone calls.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, back to gardening. Excuse me, my next caller is going to be Carl, and after that could be you if you dial quickly, 210-599-5555. Good morning, Carl.
Yeah, hey, Bob, two questions. Helping a sister out, and one is identified a groove pod vetch that was coming, that was in her yard.
Okay.
Is that building soil?
Yes.
Building the soil, leaving it there?
Yes. Okay. Yes. All vetches, they have the little nodules on the roots full of the bacteria that are actually able to take nitrogen from the air and convert it into a form the plants can use. So, yeah, vetch is one of our best cool weather soil builders. It's something very definitely leave it alone.
Okay. Yeah. Good. Okay. And then the second one is she has some rose bushes. I don't know what kind they are. I think they're the I basically want to cut them to the ground if possible. Would they come back from there?
Wouldn't cut them quite to the ground. If they're bush roses, you can cut them back by about two-thirds, and they will come back stronger and better than ever. If they are climbing roses, it won't hurt the plant to cut them back, but you lose all the spring flowers. Bush roses bloom on the new growth that comes out this spring, so when you prune them back, you're not slowing down your flowering at all. Climbing roses bloom on the wood that grew last year. So if you prune them this time of year, you're losing all the flowers, but you're not going to hurt the plants. So, yeah, it would be better to let them bloom first. Yeah.
Okay. Is knockout a bush?
Yeah, knockout is a bush rose, and probably the most common bush rose out there. And, yeah, they'll grow and bloom even better if you prune them back. Valentine's Day is kind of the day that I always tell people to prune your bush roses, so we're pretty darn close to Valentine's Day.
And you said two-thirds I can cut back?
Yeah, cut them back by two-thirds. You don't have to cut them back that much, but you won't hurt them at all cutting them back that much.
Okay. They're sort of weird shape because they were up under some oak trees, and I've cut those back. You know, there's going to be lots more sun up under there and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And what it looks like is, you know, there's like older limbs and stems or whatever that are sort of dark, you know, and then, mm-hmm. and then there's some really new ones and stuff. So would I be cutting back the new ones, the greenish reddish ones, or would I cut back? It doesn't matter.
Doesn't really matter. Doesn't really matter. Anything that is brown and dead, which you would add, you know, identify because it wouldn't have any leaves on it, those should be cut all the way out. But roses in the winter months when the temperatures are cooler, sometimes it's perfectly normal for them to get a bit of a purplish cast to the outer parts of the limb. So I'd go through and do your two-thirds cut back and then take a careful look at anything that seems to be discolored and be sure that it is healthy. Look at the bark on it. It's not really truly a bark, but it should be smooth. It shouldn't be wrinkled or you know, look like it's been dehydrated.
Okay. All right, perfect. That's it. Thank you very much.
Wear your gloves and your eye protection and get after it.
Yeah, I already got it. Okay, thank you. Bye.
You're certainly welcome, Carl. All right, it's going to be Alan and Kurt and Bob. Alan is next in line. Good morning, Alan.
Hello, good morning.
Morning, sir.
My question is about Nandinas. They're kind of have become like something I can't believe I haven't noticed before.
Okay.
I'm about 15 years old across the back of the house that I kind of didn't pay attention to, and they're gorgeous, and the birds mm-hmm. like them.
Mm-hmm.
Fallen, you know, it's 10 feet tall, might have gotten taller. Will they grow in shade?
They will grow in shade. Yeah, they will grow in shade just fine, but they will not get that brilliant red color, you know, kind of purple-red color. That happens in the winter months, and it's interesting. You know, there are a lot of trees that get colorful leaves that then fall off. Nandina gets colorful leaf that then turns green again, you know, in the spring. So I consider them to be among our best and hardiest plants. Now, the one you're talking about, the old-fashioned, they call it heavenly bamboo that gets really big, gets a little bare-legged down at the bottom, but there are new varieties. There's one called Compacta that gets about 4 to 5 feet tall. And then there are some truly dwarf ones that only get about 18 inches tall, like Harbor Bell and Harbor Dwarf. But all of those will be fine in a shadier spot. They just won't have the brilliant color that you're enjoying this year, because I'm sure that area is probably pretty sunny.
Well, what'd you call the tall one? Is it a bamboo?
They call it heavenly bamboo. No, it's Nandina domestica is its full botanical name, but most people these days, they don't like the fact that it gets kind of bare-legged down at the bottom. It's still available, but that's you would ask either for standard Nandina or heavenly bamboo if you want the taller one. If you want one that stops at 5 to 6 feet, ask for Compacta.
You know, I like the big one, and it
okay.
does kind of, you know, if you, I never heard anybody call it the bamboo thing, but it does, I don't know, propagate or whatever the word is around it. It's in a,
yeah,
like a 5 foot square bed on each side of the patio,
mm-hmm.
and if you don't watch it, it'll fill up the bottom. You know?
Yeah, it can be a little bit invasive, but understand it's not bamboo. It's not related to bamboo. That's just a common name for it, but it is available out there. But go to a good nursery. If you just go in and ask for Nandina, you're probably not going to get that one because it's not as common as it once was, but it is available out there. So just ask for either standard Nandina or heavenly bamboo Nandina, and it's out there.
Is that something you think you have in stock?
We don't normally keep that one in stock. We can normally get it for you, but quite honestly, like I say, most people, that's not the most popular variety. The most popular variety is Compacta, which I'm pretty sure we have quite a number of out there. But I know the other is available.
Yeah, I see those, you know, as accent around garden beds and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, if you need the other and need any number of them, give us a little notice and we'll do our best to get them for you.
All right. One other quick question. I had some of these, and I don't know the name. It's fern-type plant that was underneath trees and just got 3 feet tall and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The freeze came, and everything's tops are dead.
Yeah.
I don't know what you would call it other than it almost looks like a house plant, but it grows outside.
Yeah, well, you don't want to have to learn words like dryopterus or things like that. You can just call that river fern. And, yeah, it's perfectly normal for it to freeze to the ground in the winter, but then it comes right back out in the spring. If it has frozen, go ahead and cut it back now, because if you wait for the new growth to come out, then it's real hard to go through and separate out the part that froze from the new part that's coming out. And, you know, I'll reach down with my pruning shears and go snip, and the wrong one always falls over. So go ahead and you know, you can just go over with your lawnmower if you want to. But cut off all that frozen dead stuff, and 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on how quickly it warms up, it'll be as thick and pretty as it ever was.
Well, you know, I had 10 or 15 of them before the hard freeze,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't come back. I don't think they were in the ground long enough to
right.
establish a root system
yep.
or something.
Yep, right.
They didn't come back, so there goes another 15 at $34.95.
Ooh, it ought to be at $9.95 or $10.95 or something. You're spending too much money wherever you're shopping.
It was a 5-gallon pot, and
okay.
I don't know if it's river fern or not. It's got, you know, 3 or 4 inch wide leaves, and it variegated.
No, there's no variegated fern like that. Yeah, if you have a picture of it, or if you have even a frozen leaf off of it, bring it by or take it by Fanix or Rainbow or somewhere where they've got somebody that knows something, and we can probably tell you what it was for sure. But the only variegated fern that I know of is, it's one that's out of Africa that has sort of a green and yellow variegation. You know, is a pretty thing, but be a real heavily variegated one. it would be unusual, I'll put it that way, if it was indeed a fern.
It'll come back, the ones I'm talking about?
Without knowing what it is, I can't tell you for sure, but I certainly wouldn't give up on it. It's called East Indian holly fern. It's the only variegated fern that I know of. And so, if it is a fern, if it is variegated, it's probably the East Indian holly fern, and it may or may not come back, but,
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. Talk to Bob now. 210-599-5555.
All right, let's get back to gardening. Jimmy, I believe Kurt is next in line. All right, I think that's right. Good morning, Kurt.
Hey, good morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, I've got a little problem at my yard in Victoria. I've got a stinging nettle that's basically invaded my backyard.
Okay.
It's not the bull nettle, it's the stinging nettle with the little heart-shaped leaves and a serrated edge around it.
Right.
And I've got chickens that I let kind of free range around the backyard and the back acre, so I'm kind of hesitant to use any sort of harsh chemicals.
Oh, I would never use
something that'll get them.
Yeah, never would use any harsh chemical. What kind of grass do you have in that area?
I've got some carpet grass in St. Augustine in part of the yard, and then the other part of the yard has got a Bermuda grass.
Okay. And is your Bermuda still browned out for the winter, or is it green?
It never really turned brown. It all stayed green.
That's what you lucky Rockport people get to put up with. Us northerners, everything gets so brown. Unfortunately, there's not any product that is going to be harmless to green grass. If the grass was still brown, I'd tell you go after it with the vinegar and orange oil, take 2 or 3 treatments to kill it back. The good news is that it is weaker than St. Augustine or Bermuda, either one. And if it were mine, I would, you know, anywhere that you can get in there with a grubbing hoe and get at the base of that woody stem, and then with, you know, good gloves dispose of it. But in most cases, fertilizer, water, St. Augustine should choke it out. It'll be a little bit longer because Bermuda's not quite as aggressive as St. Augustine, but either one of those grasses will ultimately choke it out. I'd mow a little bit lower than usual, and I would probably give an extra feeding or two this year. And unfortunately, that's about the best you can do. But I know a lot of people that, you know, have totally let their grass choke it out. But there is no safe spray. Anything you put on to kill that is going to damage your grass as well.
Okay, very good then. Thank you much.
Little compost would also help. You know, half an inch of compost over that area will also encourage that grass to get a little bit thicker. But that's your best bet. And, you know, if you attack it properly by summertime, it should have pretty much eliminated the stinging nettle. It has for me in the past.
Okay, we'll give that a try then.
Very good. I appreciate the call. Thank you. All right, next man in line is a fellow with a really good name. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, I got a question. I got my tomato plants that I planted last year. They're going to be in the same spot. I'm unable to move my cages this year. Is there going to be a problem with that?
No, sir. You do need to, you know, put down fresh fertilizer. You need to put some fresh soft rock phosphate in the bottom of the hole. But there's, you know, in a good, healthy garden, there's no reason not to replant in the same spot year after year after year. I believe in putting down some beneficial nematodes before, you know, I plant. And if there were any issue with wireworms or anything like that in the soil, that would certainly take care of it. But no, I replant the same spot, you know, year after year, and these things seem to get better instead of worse.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard rumors that you're not supposed to do that, and I was just wondering.
There, you know, technically, there are things like root knot nematodes, which generally are not that much of a problem. There are no real diseases in there, and I can't really think of anything that would give me any cause. I mean, if you're still using the synthetic chemical fertilizers and things like that, yeah, you've burned a lot of stuff out of the soil. But if you're staying with things like the Medina products, like I say, I would very definitely put a fresh layer of rock phosphate in the bottom of the holes before you plant. But there's no reason at all to not replant in the same area.
All right. Have you heard anything about the new Rodeo tomato?
I don't know which one they've picked this year. I know that the organization that makes the selection has changed, and I really haven't heard what it's going to be this year. So I'm sure they'll let us know pretty soon, because the rodeo's coming up here pretty soon as well. But haven't heard what their choice is. I'm hoping that the new organization's going to pay a little bit more attention. For a while, I think it was just one individual just looking through there and say, oh, this one looks interesting. Hopefully they'll put a little research behind it. But believe me, I'm going to plant plenty of celebrities. I'm going to plant plenty of Sun Gold, plenty of, you know, Sweet 100s, all the ones that I know work well. And I'll give a couple of them a try just as an experiment. But newer is not always better. I'll just put it that way. And I'll let you know as soon as I know.
All right. Appreciate your time this morning, Bob.
It's always a pleasure. I appreciate the call. Thank you. Goodbye. All right. Now we've got Barbara and Judy waiting to talk, so it's Barbara's turn. Good morning, Barbara.
Hello. I'm in Karnes County.
Okay.
And I've been raking leaves this morning, and I find a lot of runners on my St. Augustine, and they're, how do I get them to attach, or how do I prevent that?
Well, you probably had some grubworm damage that has cut the root sometime late in the fall. They will do better really without anything. If you want to do the best you can, a little fertilizer and then about half an inch of compost. You don't want to bury them completely, but the absolute best thing you could do would be to put a little compost down in that area where you're seeing these rootless runners, so to speak.
Yes. Well, they're rooted, but they're just long, and they're not rooted after about an inch.
Yeah. No, a little compost over the top and a little bit of, you know, good organic fertilizer, Medina, Nature's Creation, MaestroGrow, any of those. Little fertilizer, little compost will help them root down just fine. And we're getting close. The St. Augustine really hasn't come back into full growth yet. In Karnes County, you're a little bit warmer than we are. But even if you did nothing back from where they're rooted, they would branch and continue to grow. But if it were mine, I'd just put some compost over it, a little fertilizer, and don't worry about it.
Okay. Also, I have a west facing wall that I'd like to put something perennial there. It's shaded by the house till about noon, 1 o'clock, and then get that afternoon sun.
Okay.
And it's shaded by trees a little bit. So what can I put there against the wall? Some perennial that I can just...
Okay. Keep. Are you looking for like an evergreen shrub, or are you looking for a perennial flower that it would be okay if it froze back in the winter but then came back in the spring?
Well, I would like flowering, yes. Okay. Flowers.
Unfortunately, there are not many shrubs that do that, but good perennial flowers that would... you know, be pretty against that wall, but would freeze down, but then come back. There's a plant called Salvia indigo spires. It's one that'll get up, close to 3 feet tall, bloom with blue flowers, spikes of blue flowers all summer. Butterflies love it. It's a really pretty thing. Freezes down, but comes back out each year. There is an evergreen salvia called Salvia leucantha, or Mexican bush sage. Doesn't get quite as tall, but I think it would be enough sun for that salvia. It has a lavender, sort of an orchid lavender flower that is very attractive and would be pretty in that area. There is, people call it a bulb, but it's really a plant that grows from a rhizome, a plant called a canna, C-A-N-N-A. I think you would have enough sunlight there for cannas, and they also freeze to the ground.
I've got a few somewhere else, yeah. Okay.
Yep. I think those would be pretty in front of that wall. Other things that you could try, there's a yellow shrub called Thryallis, T-H-R-Y-A-L-L-I-S. That's actually its easy name.
Got some of those in my garden, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It, I think it would do well up against that wall. I'm kind of running through my mental list of all the good things that are out there, but those are all things I think that would get up tall enough, you know, to make a pretty show for you. If you wanted to put up a trellis, you could plant Confederate jasmine, and it'll grow 2 feet taller than your trellis. It won't attach itself to the wall. Now, if it's a wooden fence, it'd wind its way around through it. But it's a very, very vigorous vine, and like I say, it'll be about 2 feet taller than whatever structure you have for it to grow on. But it's going to bloom mid-spring with the most fragrant white flowers you've ever seen. You'll smell it from 100 feet away, and it would be very pretty, and that would be enough sunlight for it. I don't think that's quite enough light for Tangerine Beauty Crossvine, but I think that would be enough for Confederate jasmine. Some people call it star jasmine, and that would do. There are perennial hibiscus that are many times called mallow, M-A-L-L-O-W, mallow hibiscus. They have blooms that are about 6 inches in diameter. They're going to freeze to the ground in the winter, but come back out each year. And those would make a big, almost a shrub-like plant, even though they're totally gone in the winter months. And I think you probably have enough light for those, because, you know, sounds like this gets pretty good sun for a lot of the day, and I think those would do fine for you. So those are a few suggestions.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
Well, you're certainly welcome. Anything else I can help you with today?
Not right now, but I'll be calling.
I'll be looking forward to hearing from you. Thank you, and goodbye.
Thank you.
Certainly, goodbye. We better get a break in here. I get to talk to you for a moment once again about azomite. Once again, azomite's not a fertilizer, but it is, it's kind of like a vitamin. You know, vitamins don't replace your basic meal, but they sure do add to your health. Well, azomite will very much add to the health of your plants, whether they're shrubs, whether they're flowers, whether they're vegetables. What it is a micronutrient supplement. It is a natural ore. It's not chemically derived. It's not synthetic in any way. It's just an ore that contains iron and zinc and manganese and cobalt and molybdenum and like 98 different beneficial compounds and elements. Will never burn, will never hurt anything out there. And especially plants that have a little bit of a problem with yellowing, I think you'll really be amazed as it warms up what all azomite will do for them. I like to use it before I plant my vegetable garden, whether it's spring or fall. I like to use it in flower beds and on shrubs and things, especially those that may have a little bit of a yellowing problem. You'll find it in good nurseries and garden centers, not an expensive product by any means. You'll find it in a very finely powdered, it's called a micronized form that can be actually suspended in water and sprayed. I still like the granular form that you can just sprinkle around. Look for it wherever fine organic gardening products are sold. It's called Azomite.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right, back to gardening on this beautiful Sunday morning out there. Sun's out, blue sky, a little chilly, a little windy, but wind seems to be calming down, so this is going to be a great day to get out and get some gardening done if you like. I know a lot of you are going to be sitting in front of that TV this afternoon, but get out and enjoy the morning. Next two callers are going to be Judy and Terry. Judy's up first. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Bob. I have three questions. I have a Barbados cherry hedge. If I cut it back now, will it still bloom in the spring?
You won't have as many flowers, but it blooms on both new wood and old wood. You get more flowers if you let it bloom first and then cut it back. But if you cut it back, you'll still have flowers over the summer months. It'll just take them a little longer to develop.
Okay. The next question I have is, I planted a bunch of sago palm seeds probably about 4 years ago. And I threw them all in the same bed, and I want to try to transplant one or two of them. They have a taproot that I think goes to hell.
No,
do
they
I
really
root, or get just some root?
You don't have to get any roots, but this is not the time of year to transplant them. Sagos retransplant in the hottest part of the summer. They're just totally opposite of most green shrubs. This is a time you'd be transplanting pittosporum or Burford holly or crepe myrtles or things like that. But sagos are a whole different classification of plants. And when you cut the roots die all the way back to the base of the trunk anyway. So no reason to try to get a big root system on them. But you have to wait till July or August when the soil's really warm. Then just dig them as best you can, transplant them. They start putting on new roots immediately, but you can't do it while the weather's cold. They may end up dying on you. So if you can put it off till summertime, they're really, really easy to transplant.
Well, that's really good to know. I had a bunch of them, and I when I tried to dig one up just recently, the root was so long, I thought, God, I'll never get it out of the ground.
Well, it's a very woody root system, but it's not truly a taproot. But, you know, the we call them cycads, things like sagos and dayuns and zamias, all that sort of thing. But they're all summertime transplants. Even your big palm trees, the windmills and the Roosevelts and the Washingtonias, even those have to be transplanted in hot weather. But that's the nice thing, that you don't have to get a big root ball. You just have to wait till summer to do it.
Okay. I got one more question.
Yes.
I planted two magnolia trees and three Mexican sycamores.
Okay.
And when I fixed the soil, I used everything in my shed that I have listened to you over the years. I put lava sand and green sand and compost and mixed it. I have good black dirt. And the magnolia trees look great. The Mexican sycamores don't have a leaf on them.
That's normal.
That's normal. And
I'm looking out the window here.
Should I buy some of that stuff, Azomite? Is that the name of it that you just talked about? Should I put that on all the new plantings?
It would really help your magnolias. With your Mexican sycamore, I don't think it'd make much of a difference, but your magnolias would love you for it. The only thing you need to remember about Mexican sycamore is it takes a little more water if we get into drier weather. If we're going to a drought, you'll have to give your sycamores extra watering. Your magnolias, your live oaks, things like that, pecans probably be just fine if they're well established. But the only extra thing that Mexican sycamore needs will be some supplemental water if we get into a really, really dry period in nature. Sycamores grow along creek banks and river beds and things like that. So Azomite certainly wouldn't hurt them, but if you're only going to put it on one tree, I think your magnolias would benefit much more from it.
Okay, I have one more thing. In pots, I have that that vine you just talked about to the lady that blooms. I'm having a senior moment. cross vine.
You cross vine. It's, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. Should I put the azomite on those? They're in large pots on my driveway, too.
If, you know, if your tantrum beauty cross vine is healthy and blooming, it's kind of like a vitamin. You might not really need it, but it certainly will not hurt anything. A tantrum beauty cross vine is just one of those. You've chosen well on plants. Tantrum beauty cross vine is a really hardy plant that doesn't have many problems. It would enjoy it, but I'm not going to tell you it's mandatory like it is on some others.
Okay, well, the ones I have are new. I had them, and unfortunately, my husband didn't water them all up when it was done.
Well, azomite will very definitely help them if they're at all stressed. But I'm not one to try to get people just to spend money on something that's good. Lots of plants just don't need a whole lot of help to do well, and Tangerine Beauty Cross Vine is one of them. If you want to make them a little healthier, and if they are a little stressed from neglect other than your own, yeah, azomite, they would absolutely love it.
Okay, and one other thing. Of the sycamore trees, one of them that I bought them at a nursery, and uh-huh. when the man was putting it in my car, he broke the top of it.
Uh-huh.
And instead of, he was very nice and said he'd get me another one, but he was a young boy, and I thought he'd get in trouble if I said something. So I have it, and I've planted it. Will it do anything at all without...
Oh, it'll be just fine, and you're a kind and thoughtful person. But no, it'll grow a new top. We, you know, technically we call it a central leader. You know, a year from now, you'll never even know that top was broken on it. And Mexican sycamore is a fast-growing tree. If it's a ragged break, just even it up on your pruning shears, but it'll develop a new trunk coming out. And, you know, the first year, you'll be able to see where it was broken. By the second year, you'll never even know that it was broken. It'll just that new central leader will take and replace the other. And, like I say, you're very thoughtful, and hopefully the young man learned a lesson about being careful with those things, but your tree's still good.
He said, oh, I'll go get you another one, and I thought, as sure as you, I tell you that, there might not even be another one out there.
Well, your tree's...
You mentioned that tree, how great it was. They were hard to find. I don't know whether you realize that or not, but
well,
you said something about Mexican sycamore, and every place I look for one, I couldn't find them, so...
It's it is a good tree. It's there's no such thing. My old buddy Alton Grimm, that was one of my mentors for many years, Alton used to say there's no such thing as a good plant or a bad plant. Everything has good characteristics and bad characteristics. And Mexican sycamore, its greatest characteristic is that it grows very quickly. Bad characteristics, it's a little messy, and it only grows for 60 or 80 years instead of 200 or 300, but 60 or 80 is enough for most of us.
Well, I'm 80 now, so I'm not going to worry about dying anytime.
Well, and as we get older, we love things that grow a little bit faster. So you get out and have a wonderful weekend, and happy Valentine's Day, since I won't talk to you before then. It's my pleasure.
I've been trying to call you forever, and I either wait till it's too late or something. But today when he said, there's still plays, I thought, today is my day. So anyway, thank you so much, Bob.
Glad to talk to you, Judy.
So much.
I sure appreciate that. And thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. Goodbye. Next in line is Terry. Good morning, Terry.
Morning, Bob. Hey,
good morning.
I was so excited that we had all that wonderful rain in November. Only problem is all my dead grass that I wanted to get rid of this year has now got 2-foot-high green stuff growing in it, and I have to... So the question is this. I also have a lot of dead grass in the front yard, but it's stayed dead. I guess it's... I always get confused between St. Augustine and Bermuda. It's the wide-bladed grass that turns real pretty green in the summertime.
That's St. Augustine. Yeah.
That's St. Augustine. I want to put buffalo plugs, buffalo grass plugs. Do you know anybody who's ever grown buffalo grass in the San Antonio area?
There are two different kinds of buffalo grass. There is what we call a turf-type buffalo grass, which is grown as a yard grass. There is a native buffalo grass, which is grown as sort of a rural grass. And you can't mow it, you can't make a beautiful lawn out of it. So you need to be sure which type of buffalo grass you're getting. The buffalo grass that's grown as a lawn grass is usually sold in squares, just like St. Augustine. If somebody's offering you buffalo grass seed, that is probably the one that's, you know, meant more as, I won't call it a pasture grass, but you would grow that outside of your immediate yard area. You're not going to mow it and try to turn it into a lawn. So, yes, there are two types of buffalo grass. One of them does make a good lawn grass. Its strong points are that it is very drought tolerant. It's a very, very tough grass. Its weak point is that it doesn't compete well. St. Augustine or Bermuda are stronger grasses, and if they're really healthy, they're going to crowd it out. But in a drier, full sun condition, it's certainly a very good grass to consider.
Which one, then, if I want to replace it? I mean, like I said, I have the dead grass already mm-hmm. in my front yard. It's a much smaller area than in my backyard, which is, like I said, also the wonderful green weeds.
Yep.
And I want it to be drought tolerant.
Yep. If you wanted a St. Augustine, you would look for a variety that is called Floratam, Floratam.
No.
It got that name because it was developed by the University of Florida and Texas A&M, and it's the most drought-tolerant St. Augustine. If you want the most drought-tolerant grass out there, then probably just ask for turf-type buffalo grass, and it'll do fine.
Turf-type, okay. Also, I have a question about the Nandina. You mentioned Nandina as a plant to put in. I did research in Nandina. I thought was poisonous as can be on the berries to both animals and people. Am I mistaking it for something else?
It's mildly toxic. And apparently it doesn't taste good because I've never known an animal that really got after it. I'll ask Dr. Kirby when he comes in if he's ever seen a case. I've never seen a case of poisoning on Nandinas. People tell me, oh, I find a dead bird every now and then. Well, there are a lot of things that kill birds, you know, other than toxins. So, and, you know, my grandparents grew Nandinas, and everybody I've, you know, come in contact with over the years has probably had Nandinas at some point. So it's not like oleanders. It's not like there are a lot of other things out there that are highly toxic. Sago palms, Carolina jessamine. There are many toxic things out there, and I'm going to put Nandinas on the kind of middle of the road. Sure, I wouldn't want you to eat 100 of the berries, but it's not something that I'm going to rule out as deadly poisonous.
Okay, thanks. Also, I have this one probably 10 by 20 foot area when the sun is in its normal place in the summertime in my yard. It just beats down. I'm thinking about getting bamboo to grow there to be tall.
Okay.
And there's coarse bamboo, correct? And then there's the other kind that goes wild.
There's clumping bamboo, and then there's running bamboo. You want the clumping type so that your neighbors don't try to lynch you because it's gotten into their yards. The clumping type is very good. I think the best variety you're likely to find is called Golden Goddess, and it will grow 8 to 10 feet tall. If you want something that's a little more decorative, there's one that has sort of a two-tone stem. It's a variegated stem, even though the leaves are green, which is called Alphonse Carr, K-A-R-R. But the one you most commonly find is going to be Golden Goddess. It does not spread, but it does grow tall. Well, it spreads slowly, and either one of those things will tolerate the hot, hot sun and be a pretty maintenance-free plant.
Okay, thank you. Also, my pecan tree out front, I think might be half dead. It's still got some of the leaves on it, but other branches are bare. So I gave it the trick, a tick. Come on, tree.
Treatment. Say yeah, that's a mouthful. Right.
And I'm watering it devotedly, but they put Google in my neighborhood, and this giant 1,000-gazillion-pound thing got right on the roots of that tree, and I'm wondering during the drought last summer if that could have damaged the roots, putting this heavy concrete thing, this heavy monstrous thing in to cut a deal in the street.
could have damaged my roots because so dry.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't good for it, but I don't think it's the kiss of death. You know, I've got pecan trees that are right adjacent to a road that gets driven over pretty often. The drought was hard on, you know, some trees that are used to getting supplemental water from us, but just like running over your foot with something like that, it's going to do some damage, but it's not going to kill you. So let's wait and see how things come out this spring. I think you may be surprised. There are a lot of trees that still have some brown leaves on them that are perfectly healthy. Pecans, of course, are going to be about the last thing to come out, so don't look for new growth for a couple of months. But if your tree was in good shape when it started dropping leaves in the fall, I think there's a very strong chance it'll come out beautifully.
Okay, so you don't think a 2,000-pound thing on the right next to the tree, right next to the root of the tree, it rolled up this piece of equipment to cut the hole in the street. So it came onto my property on my tree root of the pecan, and that's why I'm worried about heavy weight. Well, when they said the soil had dried out so bad, that's why the pecan trees are dying all over.
Well, their pecan trees aren't dying all over. There are a few trees that are, but realize that even if, you know, that thing was sitting right on top of it, it probably wasn't covering more than 10 or 15% of the root system, so that's 85% of the root system that was undamaged. So I certainly wouldn't lose any sleep over it. We'll just see how things come out, but that tree wasn't good for it. But again, it was a relatively small portion of the root system that it compacted, so that tree should survive and recover.
Thank you. Have a good one. Appreciate it.
You do the same, Terry. Thank you for the call this morning. Jimmy, let's get a break done here, and we'll be right back. A couple of open lines. Grab one if you like. 210-599-5555.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 1071.
All right. Looks like a beautiful day out there, and I'm still seeing people running around in short sleeves, so it must not be too cold out there. It's going to be a good day, going to be a good week. I think most everybody got at least some rain, and by the middle of the week, we may get a little bit more. Let's get back to the phone lines. I believe next in line is going to be John. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I was out in the garden yesterday and looking at the raised bed, and they look normal.
Uh-huh.
And then my wife went out there this morning, and she saw what looked like could only be described as bread dough that bubbled up through the ground in the raised bed, about the size of a dinner plate, and it's light yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And it came up overnight.
Yeah, it is almost certainly a fungus of some sort. It could be something they call slime mold, and it's not a problem. It's, you know, our soils are full of different fungi that are working to break down the woody organic material that is mixed into the soil, and it's not harmful. If you want to get rid of it, if you want to reduce it, sprinkle a little sulfur, just good old dusting sulfur, sprinkle a little bit of sulfur over that, and it will go away. The only problem, sometimes it kind of gets a little bit hard, and water doesn't penetrate it as well, in which case I just kind of break it up with a spading fork or shovel or something like that. But this is not anything toxic or problematic. Don't worry about it. And yes, the fungi can grow very, very quickly, but it's very closely related to mushrooms and toadstools. And like I say, it's not anything to worry about. And just simply a good dusting of sulfur will get it to go away if you don't want to look at it.
Well, I was thinking about vinegar.
Wouldn't hurt anything, but I'm not sure that it would. I'm not sure it would make it go away. You can certainly give it a try, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if that doesn't work, then like I say, a little sulfur would be something you can pick up at the hardware store, and that'll take care of it.
Okay. It just, like I say, it just came up overnight. But I was out
yesterday
afternoon.
And it's Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, mushrooms, toadstools, things like that. One day they're not there, and the next day they're everywhere. And I don't know why. They seem to grow so much more at night, but it's not like a woody stem. It's not like a plant that's, you know, actually growing stems and leaves and things like that. It's forming something that's just like, it's just kind of a massive growth. They call them mycelium. And it's not uncommon, but like I say, it's not harmful in any way.
By the way, the rodeo tomato is the Rambler.
Rambler.
And it won't even be out till March.
Okay. Just R-A-M-B-L-E-R?
Yes, yes.
Oh, well, thank you for that information. I appreciate it very much.
And they said that they're growing them now. Grow them, and they will be ready for March.
Very good. Well, it's... I think it's a little early to be planting them anyway, so we'll be looking at them and giving some of them a try, and I really appreciate the information, John. Thank you so much.
And I sure do. Thank you.
You're certainly welcome. And take a picture of that. You know, it's it'll be interesting. Like I say, this may be the only time in your life you ever see it, but it's actually a sign that you have a lot of good organic material in the soil, so it's certainly not indicative of a problem. It's maybe a nuisance, but it's not a threat, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Well, the top 4 inches was all organic.
Yeah. Just turn it over with your shovel or your spade if you like, and it'll probably disappear just as fast as it appeared.
Okay, I'll do that.
Very good.
Thank you, bud.
It's my pleasure, and thank you. Jimmy, Scott still there? Did he drop off?
Nope, still there.
Still there. Then let's talk to Scott. Good morning, Scott.
Still here.
Yeah, good morning. What's going on today?
Morning. I have a question about, I really don't know what it's called. We haven't been able to figure it out. It's a sort of a cactus succulent, but it's real small. It's only, they grow in like little segments, sort of like building up a snowman.
Okay.
Anywhere from an inch to 2 inches tall.
Mm-hmm.
And about 3/4 of the heights wide.
Okay.
Kind of grayish, maybe green, I don't know, I'm colorblind. But it has like little fish bones instead of all the hair and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It has like little, what looks like fish bones coming out the top of it.
Uh-huh.
My question is, one of my dogs just happened to get a hold of it, and I have a bunch of little segments now.
Mm-hmm.
How do I transplant them? I've had one that fell off a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And I put it in soil, and it hasn't grown roots in 3 months.
Okay.
Do I have to, like, cut, like, I don't know, a quarter of an inch off the bottom of it?
No.
And let it dry out and callus?
Not usually. Do you know, does it have a milky sap, or does it have a clear sap, or you've never seen sap on it?
No, it looks just like a cactus on the inside.
Okay. It probably is. There's so many different things. Some of them good, some of them bad. I was afraid you were going to describe this one that people call Tasahio or something that is, oh, man, it's just the scourge of the hill country. You don't ever want to have it. I think yours is one of the little more decorative ones, and
it's not that big.
Yeah, it's it may be one. There's one called a Hatoria that looks like little beer bottles stacked on top of each other. But to get it to root, the best thing you could do would be to take either a pot or a flat tray of a cactus and succulent soil, kind of make a little furrow through it, and then just kind of stand these up so they're like a third buried and two-thirds out. Of course, you'll have to be careful in watering them that you don't knock them over or stop them from forming roots. You can actually get a nozzle for your hose is called a mist, M-I-S-T, a mist nozzle. And it's just when you turn it on, it's just almost like a cloud that comes out. And that's what I use for watering, you know, very delicate young seedlings or things that I'm trying to root. Ultimately, in you know, in the really hot weather, you could probably just leave the segments lying on top of the soil, and many of them would take root. But if you want to speed it up, like I say, just make like a little furrow and stand up these little pieces, just like little soldiers along there, burying about one-third and about two-thirds above the top. And I'll tell you that, you know, with a little time, at least half of them should root and grow. If you have a propagating mat, that'll speed things up a little bit, but just warmer weather and longer days, most of them are going to take root and grow for you.
Okay. Well, like I said, I did that with the one segment that I tried, so I was wondering if maybe I needed to cut it and let it callus or what, because it hadn't done anything in a few months.
Well, but you're talking about the winter season when the days are short and the soil's cooler and the temperature's cooler. So sure. This, in general, is not the time of year that you would expect things to root out. So is it still plump and green, the one that you tried?
Oh, yeah.
Is it? Yeah, well, then you're
that's
just...
That's what I love about this plant. I can not water it for 2 months and it's still good.
Everybody's dream. No, I would water it occasionally, but I don't think it's going to do much until it warms up. But here we are in the middle of February. It won't be long before soil's a lot warmer, and at that point, it almost certainly will start putting out roots. But I'm not at all surprised that through the winter months it didn't, because they just go into their own kind of semi-dormant state this time of year. And unless you put it on a propagating mat or put it in a greenhouse or something like that, it's just going to sit there till spring or summer comes.
Okay. Kind of the same question on the aloe vera. It doesn't have mm-hmm. one that bloomed, and it started uh-huh. growing on the spike, and I know the spike's supposed to go down into the ground and do that, but it hasn't rooted either. Same thing, it's just too cold.
Just exactly the same thing. You can probably, what you can do is just, you know, cut the spike off, you know, cut it off above and below. Orchids do this sometimes, make little plantlets on the bloom spikes. So they call them kikis, which is the Hawaiian word for baby. But having a little bit of the stem below it will help anchor it in the soil. Just cut at that point, put it down where you've got, you know, a half an inch or maybe, you know, a quarter to half an inch of the base of that little plantlet down in your soil. Keep it moist but not soggy wet, and it almost certainly will root for you. But aloe veras are more commonly propagated from little plants that come off the base, but that little plant that's developing on the stem, it will ultimately form roots for you. But again, don't be in a hurry. It's not going to happen until the soil and the weather get warmer.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Well, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate the call, and you get out and have a great weekend. Jimmy, let's get our last break of the show in here, and we'll be right back with more gardening.
South Texas Gardening with Bob Webster is on the air. News Talk 550 KTSA and FM 107.1.
All right, just sunny, nice-looking day out there. Kind of the day you'd expect in February. A little bit chilly, but beautiful sunshine following a good rain. Doesn't get much better than that. Kind of wrapping up, getting down toward the end of the show. Dr. Kirby will be in pretty shortly, and we'll be talking about your pet's health coming up right after the news. But I think we've got plenty of time to talk to Ray. Good morning, Ray.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning, sir.
I want to ask you about roses. Deer resistance compared
None.
To the hibiscus.
None. Roses, deer, think roses are salad. And the only rose that I've ever found that they don't just, you know, chomp down on is the one they call the Lady Banksia or Lady Banks rose. It's a great big rose, only blooms once a year. There's a white form and a form that has little light yellow flowers. The one in my front yard's probably 8 feet tall and 10 or 12 feet across, but that's the only rose I've ever seen. And if the deer get hungry enough, you know, they'll eat that. But, even the thorniest roses out there, I don't know how they manage it, but, deer just think they're candy. Now, the nice thing about roses, you plant them once and they're perennial. They'll go down close to zero without damage. Hibiscus, on the other hand, of course, are tropical. The deer don't like them nearly as much. There is a perennial hibiscus called a mallow hibiscus. It has great big flowers. real pretty things, but they freeze all the way to the ground in the winter and then come back out. They are not as popular with the deer, but if we get a summer as dry and as hot when the deer have very little to eat, they're still gonna nibble on them. And the so-called tropical hibiscus, the deer are likely to eat that just like they do the other shrubs.
How many of those mallows can I put in a 2x4 planting area?
2x4 planting area, you could put 3 of them in there probably. They're going to make a bush that's about 3.5 feet tall and maybe 2 feet wide, and the blooms will be 6 inches across, sometimes even bigger. So they are spectacular. And like I say, they freeze and go away in the winter, but we've had them, well, even after the, you know, really cold weather we had in 2021, they came right back out. They sometimes use them as boulevard plantings. We're over in Atlanta a couple of times a year at a big gift market, and they're starting to use them in their street plantings, and Atlanta's colder than we are, and they seem to come back well for them. So they should do fine for you. And since we've had a little bit more rain, since the deer have a little bit more of their natural browse, hopefully they'll leave them alone.
All righty. That's all I got for you today, sir.
Well, then you get out and have a wonderful day, and we'll talk again, right? Appreciate the call. Yep. Certainly. Less than a minute, about a minute and a half here left in the show. Just time to tell you, it is a good time to fertilize. Even if your grass is still wet, like mine was this morning from the rains, organic fertilizers do not burn. They do not cause any problems. Don't be putting any of that synthetically derived fertilizer out where it sticks to the grass, but I don't think you should be putting out anyway. Good organic products, you can use them 365 days a year, and we're just about to move into that season where a lot of things leaf out, come back into bloom, and they need the nutrition. Be good to get it out a little bit early so the microbes in the soil have time to convert it to things that plants absorb regularly. So if you're looking for something to do at halftime or whatever, get out and fertilize the yard. I'm teasing about that, but it's just one of those many things that you ought to be doing. Still a great time to put compost on the yard. Probably not today, but that half-inch layer of compost will do more than just about anything else you could do to stimulate good growth from your grass, but suppress all those weeds that are trying to come up right now. If your grass is still brown, especially if you have Bermuda or Zoysia, and you are getting lots of dandelions, henbit, clover, all those things coming up, remember that you can safely spray the vinegar and orange oil mix, a gallon of vinegar, 2 ounces of orange oil, and I had just a little bit of molasses, a little bit of dish soap. That'll kill all the weeds but won't hurt your grass at all. Be thinking of your questions for Dr. Kirby, because he's next here on KTSA Radio, San Antonio, Texas.